All right, so welcome back to the Theotivity Podcast. My name is Thaddeus, and I'm so glad that you joined me for this episode. This is episode 2, and I know that there are some of you that were just biting your nails, waiting in eager, anxious expectation for this second episode on Christian dating. We've got a lot to cover this episode. I'm going to go through 7 tips for Christian dating. So let's jump on in.
The Theotivity Podcast. Theotivity is the place where theology and creativity come together. Here you'll find audio narration of articles, episodes exploring the faith, culture, the arts, and media, systematic theology, apologetics, guest interviews with Christian thinkers, creatives, pastors, theologians, and much more. At theotivity.com, you'll find articles and resources to help you grow in your faith, as well as a portfolio of creative works. Like, share, and subscribe to stay up to date on the latest content.
All right, so Christian dating, right? The Christian dating scene can be so confusing and frustrating. So much different advice, so many complexities to navigate, right? How is a Christian single supposed to find a mate these days? Now, I don't pretend to be some kind of dating guru, right? These are just my thoughts and things that I learned along the way that I wish somebody had told me when I was younger. So perhaps I can help somebody who's kind of coming up to think through these things more intentionally. And, you know, dating these days is really difficult. I definitely don't envy those who are single and looking to find a mate. Not to mention the added challenge of recent times of COVID-19 and lockdowns, right? I don't know how you date with a mask. but, you know, I definitely don't miss those days for searching for a spouse. But I feel for my single friends. I have a lot of single friends still. And I hope that this episode can be of help to them just for some good food for thought. And just a reminder, though, right, that marriage is not an ultimate thing, right? We're to be content in the Lord in whatever station he's put us in. But it is an important thing, right? It's an important thing. Not an ultimate thing, but it's an important thing. And sometimes we can speak in one of two imbalanced ways, right? Either, oh, you know, I'm happy and single and don't want to ever get married, right? While you're secretly struggling and trying to keep up the charade and dying inside, right? Don't be that person. Or on the other hand, you could be obsessed over marriage and emotionally falling apart at every sappy chick flick or, you know, some reminder of your singleness. Don't be that person either, right? Marriage is good. And the desire to be married is a good one that you should pursue with godly wisdom. So what I hope here to do is to be able to give some of that to you from what I've considered and what I've learned, right? And again, I don't consider myself some sort of relationship expert by any means, but I hope that you can glean some wisdom. Now, the focus here is not going to be on strategies to find someone to date in this episode, but rather on dating itself, okay? And I pray that you're going to find some helpful principles. So without any further ado, let me jump straight in. These are 7 tips or principles, you can call them, for Christian dating, right? And again, this is meant for Christians, right? As you pursue marriage through dating, hopefully these tips will be helpful. So number one is date for marriage. I think that one should be uncontested. Regardless of who you are, right? Don't date around merely for fun, right? Dating is for marriage, right? That's the purpose of it. So with that consideration, probably one of the first things you should know is not to date an unbeliever. And that one is very, very straightforward, right? That one is straight from scripture, 2 Corinthians 6:14, right? To not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. And Christians who try to get around that are in direct disobedience. Okay, I'm not going to sugarcoat that, but that is just very clear from scripture. Read that verse, 2 Corinthians 6:14. Read the context around it and tell me if you can come to any other conclusion. Christians are not to date unbelievers, right? Because dating is for marriage and you're not to marry an unbeliever. So why start dating one? Right. And related to that, in terms of dating for marriage, you have to know what the end goal and purpose of dating is, right? Many people will date forever because they don't have a clear end goal for dating, right? Dating is not meant to be a perpetual state. That would be like, you know, taking the bus to a destination, but then never getting off. And you just keep riding it around and around the city, right? That doesn't make any sense. Know the end goal and the purpose for dating. And also, you need to know what marriage is for, right? If dating is, you're dating for marriage, then you need to know what marriage is for, which is companionship, right? Procreation, important. Mission, right? Imaging Christ and the church. Those are some of the things that marriage is for, what God designed marriage for. You need to know the purpose of marriage because that'll help you in your dating. Because now you ask questions like, could this person help you do those things, right? Is this the person that I see that I can find companionship, godly companionship, right? Procreation, right? That we can start a godly family. That is one of the purposes of marriage, right? And is this, you know, another question you can ask is this person the right tool for the job, right? For mission or for helping me to image Christ and the church. That is what marriage is supposed to do. Ephesians chapter 5, Paul explicitly makes that clear, that marriage images church, Christ and the church, right? The husband images Christ and the wife images the church in a submission to her husband, right? So as you date, you should be asking, well, is this person the right tool for the job, so to speak? Is this person going to help me accomplish these purposes of marriage? And related to that as well, you got to understand gender roles. And that is a topic that is not very popular in our culture today. Our culture rejects gender roles and it moves towards a very radical egalitarianism and flattening of the distinctions between male and female. Actually, sometimes just doesn't even know what a man or a woman is, right? But the Bible is very clear about what a man and a woman is and what their purpose is. What is the design that God has given to them, right? So women, you are called to respect and to submit to your husband in the Lord. So you can ask yourself, as you're dating, is the guy that you're dating someone deserving of your respect who you can joyfully submit to his leadership? If not, right, and this guy that you're dating is some schlub that you don't respect or you don't think that he deserves your respect or you can't joyfully submit to his leadership or you're always dragging him along, right? Well, then that's probably not the right guy to marry. You're just making things harder for yourself in marriage should it end there, right? Titus 2 actually says that older women are to train younger women, and literally in the Greek it says, to be husband lovers and children lovers, right? So that in and of itself should tell you something, that you need to have an older woman in your life training you, right? Discipling you. But also notice there what it says, that they're to be children lovers as well. So this is a good question. Do you have an older woman mentoring you in that? And also, do you love children? Do you see yourself becoming a mother and having a growing desire for that? Right? Men, you are called by scripture to lead and to love your wife. So good question to ask first of all is, are you leading yourself? Or do you have a plan for your life, right? That you can ask a young lady to come alongside you as a helpmeet. That's a word that the old King James used to use, right? That the woman is a helpmeet for the man. And, you know, do you have this mission for your life, that you a plan that you can invite a young lady to come alongside you in as a helpmeet and be excited about that mission, right? Are you the type of man that others would follow? And if not, well, why do you expect that a godly woman would want to follow you, right? Do you have a plan for your life? Do you have a godly plan for your life? Do you have a biblical mission for your life? Because that's what you do as a man. You lead your family, you lead your wife, and she follows along. She submits to that, and she is a helpmeet to that mission. You see, what happens in marriage is not that mission decreases, but it increases, because now it's not just one, but two. Okay? So be the man. This is good advice to any man out there looking to date and looking to marry. Be the man that the woman you'd want to marry would want to marry. Let me say it again. Be the man that the woman that you'd want to marry would want to marry. Right? How are you, for example, loving the woman that God has already put in your life? So your mom, your sisters, if you have any, right? How are you loving them? Because how you love the woman that God has already put in your life is going to prepare you for how you're going to love your wife too. Now, another related thing is that men are supposed to wash their wives with the water of the word in their imitation of Christ, right? In Ephesians 5. So good question is, are you washed in the word today or are you still dirty, right? Are you washing yourself in the word or are you still dirty? Are you using the word to help you sanctify yourself, to live more holy and devoted to God, right? Because if not, then how are you expecting to do that for another person? Are you under godly authority? That's another good question, right? Because as husbands, you lead your wife, right? Are you now a man who knows what it is to be under authority? You see, you won't know how hard it is to live under authority, especially when you disagree with that authority, unless you're actually living that out. So for example, in the church, under godly elders, right? And you know, you're not going to know how to live with your wife in an understanding way, as 1 Peter 3:7 commands husbands, unless you're doing this. Because there are times where I live under authority, right? Under elders and spiritual mentors and so on. And there are going to be times where you disagree with those spiritual authorities that God has put over you. And that is training for you and is also telling you, okay, this is what it feels like to live under authority and to gladly submit to that authority, even if I may disagree with them. Of course, as long as they're not leading you into sin, right? Now, ladies, avoid a man who does not live under authority, because he is not going to know how to steward his authority gently. That man is going to run the danger of being a cold dictator in the home or a reckless and unaccountable rebel. Either way, you don't want that guy, right? Observe how he interacts with the authority over him, especially if you can observe how he deals with instances where he disagrees with them, right? Is he always backtalking? Is he always talking bad about them behind their back, etc., right? Or can he still respectfully disagree with them, right? That's going to tell you a lot. And related to this is for you guys, right? That you need to also see, how does this young lady submit to authority, right? Is she accepting of the godly authorities in her life, such as her father, especially if he's a godly father, such as her elders and spiritual mentors that are in her life? Does she joyfully submit to their leadership and honor them and respect them? Because that will tell you how she will likely treat your headship as her husband should you guys get married later. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, Paul warns, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." So let me ask you this. What do you think the effects will be of keeping company with a bad wife or a bad husband, right? A good woman for you men is going to further your mission of establishing a godly household. But a foolish woman, as Proverbs 14:1 says, tears it down with her own hands, right? A foolish woman tears down her own house with her own hands. You don't want to end up with a foolish woman. So just as a woman has to be careful of accepting a marriage proposal, right? So also you men, you have to be careful in extending one, right? The consequences of a wise choice are glorious, and the consequences of bad choices can be actually really detrimental. Proverbs 7, verse 26 to 27 says, "For many are the victims she has cast down," this is talking about the foolish woman, "and numerous are all her slain," right? This is the woman that Proverbs talks about that, as the temptress, right? "Her house is the way to Sheol, descending to the chambers of death." Guys, you got to look out for that. I know it's sometimes exciting to get the attention of a woman who might, you know, look all the right ways, wear all the right clothes, and have all the Instagram likes. But is that the woman that you want to be your wife and the mother of your children? And conversely, for the woman, right? Look at the man. Is he the type of guy that you're going to see as a godly man who can be your husband and the father of your children, right? Many men can testify that it's hell to be married to an ungodly woman, and vice versa is true too, that it's hell to be married to an ungodly man. Now, I know that what I'm saying is not really that popular, especially in contemporary evangelicalism and modern sort of sensibilities, right? They like to talk a lot about toxic masculinity, and I think there's truth in that, that there are some forms of masculinity that do turn toxic, but there's also such a thing as toxic femininity, right? And that's the thing that oftentimes is not at all spoken about or even preached about from pulpits because of, you know, the whole sort of bent of our culture, right? But there is such a thing as toxic femininity. And men, you'd be wise to avoid it. And women, you'd be wise to not fall into it. Now, the reason why this is so important to understand is that our sexuality is actually a very powerful thing. And Satan knows this, and this is why he loves to twist it, right? That he loves to twist sexuality, and we see this all throughout our culture. But this is why we need to be wise about these things. And this is why, as especially men, you have to avoid, Proverbs tells the young man that is instructing, to avoid such a woman, right? Sometimes men go into it thinking that they won't fall prey to that, right? But you might think maybe you're too smart for her charms to work on. But don't be so sure, right? It's worked on millions of smart men. Are you really thinking that you're wiser than Solomon? Think about it. Solomon fell to ungodly women, and he lost his kingdom because of it, The Bible says that he was the wisest man on the face of the earth. He was given wisdom by God, and he fell to ungodly women. See 1 Kings 11, for example, where it says that, "For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as his heart of David his father had been. So the Lord said to Solomon, 'Because you have done this, you have not kept my commandments and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and give it to your servant.'" Guys, you are not wiser than Solomon.
Also related to this first point about dating for marriage is the principles of reciprocity and growth, right? So men, you choose the woman that you love, and then you love your choice. That's how this works, okay? And in loving her by your spiritual leadership, you actually make her lovelier. That's what it means for a man to wash his wife in the water of the word, right? So that he might present her blameless to Christ, okay? And ladies, by respecting and honoring your man in marriage, that should make him more respectable and honorable. You see, it motivates a godly man to live up to that. And that's how, for example, women win over their husbands by even without a word, right? That's what scripture says in 1 Peter. And it's irony of ironies, right? Then that, you know, when we withhold those things from our spouse, right? When we withhold men, love for your wife, or women, respect for your husband, right? That they actually grow less lovely and respectable. This is because of God's design, right? Of reciprocity and growth. So believe God's design and love it. You see, there are many conservative Christian men and women who will affirm gender roles because, you know, they have to. But there's very few who actually love it because they see the beauty of God's design. And you can tell which one you are when the rubber hits the road and things get tough, because they will in marriage. So when you're dating, try to figure out if this person is just affirming gender roles, you know, because they maybe are in a Christian conservative church, right? Or if they actually love the design and they see it as beautiful. And there's a couple of ways that that happens, especially if they've seen it lived out at home. So for example, my wife, she's seen that modeled by her father and mother. They are such a godly example of this, of seeing this dynamic of a husband who leads and loves his wife and a wife who joyfully submits to that. And because of that, Kylie, my wife, she doesn't just intellectually believe it, but she loves the beauty of the design. So that's one of the things that you want to see in the person that you're dating, that they don't just intellectually affirm the beauty of God's design for the gender roles and the truth of it, but they actually love it. They are excited by it, right? Because the one who, that's the type of person who's going to trust the design even when the going gets tough, right? The ones who just do lip service will likely abandon it and find some convenient excuse to justify it, right? So look out for that. Second tip on Christian dating is to guard your hearts. Guard your hearts, okay? That one also should be very uncontroversial. Guard your hearts. I don't act like you're married when you're not. Simple principle. Don't act like you're married when you're not. Because when you're dating, you are not married. There's no covenant yet, right? So don't be stupid. You see, attraction is like a fire. And that's a good thing. God has built us that way, that we build attraction, right? And attraction is like a fire. And in the right context, it can cook your food, but in the wrong context, it'll burn your house down, right? So how you guard, men, how you guard her heart now is going to tell her how she can trust you with her heart later, right? So don't be stupid, as we say in Trinidad. Don't be dotish boy, right? Understand that attraction is like a fire, right? You got to guard your heart. You got to act with wisdom, right? So let your actions and words be appropriate to where your level of commitment actually is, right? Don't be writing her sonnets on your first or second date, or signing a lease agreement together on your third date, right? Don't sign a lease agreement unless perhaps you're moving into that place together after you get married, right? Those are just good practical ways, right? To let your actions and words be appropriate to where your level of commitment actually is. So if there's no covenant, don't act like there is, okay? And also related to that is to think covenantally. Right? You're not in a marriage covenant yet, but you are in a familial covenant as believers, right? If you both are believers in the Lord, which you should be if you're dating, back to our first point, right? Then you are in a covenant as family, your brother and sister in the Lord. So then act that way, okay? Let that guide you, right? What you're unwilling to do with your brother, or your biological brother or sister, then don't do that with your boyfriend or girlfriend, right? That's acting consistently, covenantally, okay? Now, related to that is going to be my third tip, my third principle here on Christian dating is to seek accountability, right? And first up with that, in terms of seeking accountability, is to respect the father's headship, especially from men to women, right? When you're seeking to pursue and court a young lady, respect her father's headship. And we had a whole episode on that in the last episode, so go back and listen to that one if you didn't already, about seeking her father's blessing and consent before you start pursuing her in dating, right? But also you can seek accountability through regular check-ins with spiritual mentors and brothers and sisters. And do that proactively, okay? Do that proactively. Don't wait for them to ask you. You be proactive. You take initiative and go check in with your spiritual mentors. Perhaps it's your small group leader, perhaps it's an aunt or uncle, or even your parents or your pastor, or whatever it is, right? Some godly, mature spiritual mentors and brothers and sisters in the Lord that can keep you accountable. Related to that is to set some conservative boundaries. Now, in last episode, I talked about how my example that I had a principle that I'm going to act covenantally, right? That I will not, because my relationship with my girlfriend at the time, right, who is now my wife, was that of brother and sister in the Lord, then that's going to be the principle that I act according to. But also, you got to set some conservative boundaries, right? Don't overestimate your self-control, because attraction is a very powerful thing. So set very conservative boundaries in terms of what you're willing to do, in terms of, I guess you can think of it as almost fence laws, right? That you don't want to go too far. So you set a conservative boundary on, like, perhaps, you know, things like physical touch, or being alone together, or, you know, being in certain situations that could lead to compromise, right? Don't overestimate your self-control, because as passions take over, common sense goes out the door. Right, to understand that we're actually built for attraction to the opposite sex. That's part of God's good design. And in marriage, that is a blessing, right? But don't be stupid and put yourselves in situations that would breed compromise. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Don't do that. Don't overestimate your self-control. Understand that attraction is a very powerful force. And don't do anything, right, that you wouldn't be able to look. And speaking specifically to the men, but also to the women too, right? Don't do anything that you won't be able to look her future husband in the eyes and tell him about it. Or for the ladies, that you won't be able to look his future wife in the eyes and tell her about it, right? Because you don't know for 100% yet if you're going to be that person's future husband or wife. Now, men, how you can model self-control in dating is going to tell her how much she can expect faithfulness in marriage. So take that seriously, right? Because if she can trust you in dating to protect her purity and to not push boundaries and so on, it's going to tell her a lot about your character and how she can trust you to fight. Think about this. If she can trust you to fight for her purity now, then she's going to be able to trust you with her intimacy later. And women, right? Not just going to rag on the men, but women, how you model modesty and chastity in dating is going to let him know, right, that you are wife material and not just some hussy from down the street. And so help him look you in the eyes more than in the you know where, right? You don't, and if you do that, don't be surprised if he starts liking you for what's in your head more than just what's in your knickers. Okay? I'll leave that there. Modesty is good. And on that point of modesty for you guys, right, are you looking for a modest woman? Is that attractive to you? Can you recognize a woman who is modest in her disposition, even beyond how she just dresses and what she wears? You see, modesty starts inside, is internal before it's externalized through clothing. And it's actually because of our toleration and acceptance of subtler forms of immodesty that actually has served to, I think, propagate the blatant immodesty that we see in our culture, which is characterized through dress, particularly. right? But modesty actually starts in the heart through words and deeds, right? Look at Proverbs 7, verse 11, where it says, it describes a modest woman as loud and stubborn, and her feet abide not in her house, right? That there is a loudness of spirit. And this is not talking about how loud she speaks in terms of volume of her voice. This is talking to a cantankerous spirit, right? A loud heart. That Hebrew word actually refers to a boisterous or tumultuous turbulence and commotion, right? Yeah. Is the woman that you are interested in, is she like that? This sort of phrase is meant to bring to mind the roaring wind of a storm. Do you find her to be like a storm that just blows up the place? A lot of women these days, especially in the whole radical feminist kind of girl power sort of movement, tends to produce a sort of loud, cantankerous woman. She's full of unruly energy. She's immodest because she has no sense of what First Peter in chapter 3 calls the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Oftentimes, this sort of a loud woman will go and look for a passive or a beta male, right? Somebody, a guy who will just go along and say, yes, dear, because he's easily controlled and so on. And it's actually a flipping of what God's design for the gender roles are. We see in Genesis 3, for example, with the fall, right, that the curse on woman is that her desire will be for her man, not meaning that she'll be attracted to him, that's all obvious, but rather that she would desire his place, that she would desire his rule, but he shall rule over her, right? Now, God's ordering of the gender roles, of the hierarchy of gender roles, is not a product of the fall, but is actually corrupted by the fall. Now, on the male side, men are tend towards passivity since the fall. We tend to want to abdicate our responsibility as leaders. On the female side of things, there's the tendency to want to invert God's design for the gender roles of men as leaders and heads of their households, and women joyfully submitting to their headship. So let's now apply this to dating and looking out for a potential suitable mate. Woman, are you looking for a man who is a good leader, or are you looking for a beta male who you can just push around and get to do what you want to do? Or are you looking, actually, I've seen this several times in women who look for a fixer-upper, right? They look for a guy who they think, oh man, if I could really fix him up, I could really change this guy, right? And they go into dating with the goal of changing him into their own fashion of some sort of, ideal man. That's a wrong way to go into it. And you're setting yourself up for some real trouble there. Again, you should have in mind the biblical design for marriage, right? And seek those qualities that align with that. And for the men, are you looking for a woman like what Paul describes in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, where he says, likewise, I want the woman to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. Is the woman that you're interested in, does she dress and carry herself in this way that is proper for women making a claim to godliness? Now, this doesn't mean that she dresses frumpy or is unfashionable or whatever is the case. We know that what modesty is and what just frumpiness is, okay? This is talking about how a woman dresses intentionally to attract the eyes of men who are not their husband. How she dresses herself exteriorly is going to reflect what's on the inside, because it can't help but do that. Jesus himself says that out of the heart comes the issues of life. So you can actually tell a lot from how someone externally presents themselves in these various different ways about what's going on the inside. Now, that whole topic of modesty can really go down a bunny trail, so we won't have time to go down there. But let me just say this, it's not about measuring the length of a dress and how far down the knee it is or whatever it is like that. Right? Modesty, like I said before, goes far deeper on that. It speaks to the character and disposition of a woman if she carries herself in a way that is appropriate, that is proper for women who make a claim to godliness, as Paul says in 1 Timothy.
Hey friends, I just want to take a quick moment to ask for your support. If you've benefited from the ministry of Theotivity, please prayerfully consider partnering with me by giving a donation of any amount. Big or small, it all helps. If you're like me, I know that you long to see more solid Christian content getting out there, but that takes time, effort, and money. So, if this is something that you'd like to see continue, and you found value in the content that I'm creating here at Theotivity, please consider donating at theotivity.com/donate. Thanks, and now back to the episode.
Fourth point on tip for dating, for Christian dating, right, is pursue intentionality. Pursue intentionality. So make a list of desirable qualities in a mate. Make a list, check it twice, right? And then check it with your parents and your spiritual mentors. And seriously, do this, right? Make a list of desirable qualities of what you would like to have in a mate and check it with your parents and your spiritual mentors, especially if they're, you have godly parents, do that, right? But if not, you know, with your spiritual mentors, maybe a pastor or something. And then have them tell you which ones are stupid and then take those off your list. Okay, because they will help you to filter out some stuff that perhaps in your naivety and youthfulness, you don't really think through properly. Okay, trust them. They're out for your good, especially if they are godly, spiritual, mature mentors. Okay, another tip for this in terms of pursuing intentionality is to have a list of questions for dates. Now, when I was dating my wife, we had a list of 1,000 questions to ask before marriage. We got this booklet that had 1,000 questions in it that you ask before marriage. And this was just really helpful for us to be intentional about when we were meeting together for dates and pursuing to get to know each other, right? That we could be intentional. And this list of 1,000 questions had questions that we would have never thought of on our own. And what that enabled us to do is to get to know each other on a level that that we would have not otherwise within a very short space of time, right? So we were pursuing intentionality because, again, back to the first point, we knew what dating was for. We were dating for marriage, right? So come to dates prepared and with a plan and with wisdom, right? The worst thing is that, especially for men, as you're leading in this dating relationship, have a plan. Know what you're doing. Don't just try to wing it all the time, because that's often how you end up in compromising situations, right? Now, both of you are working towards a goal, right? And that goal is either marriage or not. That's what dating is for. Right, so having a good time together, that's going to come as a welcomed accompaniment to that core goal. So therefore, dating should take no longer than it takes to determine if this is heading towards marriage. Don't keep dragging it out. Again, know the purpose of dating, right? It should only take as long as it takes for you to determine whether this is heading towards marriage. And even when dating doesn't end in marriage, listen, that's a success, because that's what dating was trying to figure out. That's the purpose of dating, right? Having a clear idea of what the purpose of dating is when you're going into it will help you with processing things coming out of it. Okay, so know and keep reminding yourself of what the purpose of dating is. And related to that, you can read books on godly masculinity and femininity separately, by the way, right? That should be perhaps something that you do separately. Right? As you pursue intentionality, you should come, and the reason why is because you should come into marriage at least knowing some of the basics, right? And you can discuss what you've been reading together on your dates and maybe compare notes and ask older couples for some feedback. But as you're dating, use the opportunity to intentionally educate yourself on what godly masculinity and femininity are. Fifth tip for godly Christian dating is to date in community. Date in community. Right? And seek it out. Invite yourselves into people's lives. You can't expect busy families with young kids to always be thinking of you. Okay, singles? I know sometimes we can fall into this this trap of being like, woe is me, nobody considers me, that kind of thing. But really, as you get married and you have kids and family and all of these responsibilities and stuff, it's not that these people are intentionally trying to forget you, but it happens, right? Like, life gets busy. So don't take it hard, but seek it out, right? It's not, oftentimes they're not unwilling, right? But you can politely, you know, invite yourself into people's lives. And what that might look like is, you know, go be a part of their family, even in doing some mundane things. You know, ladies, perhaps there's some godly woman that you trust, right? Go to the grocery store with them. Go help them to rally the kids together to go to whatever, soccer practice or whatever it is, right? You can go be a blessing to some families that way. And as you go over to godly couples' houses for dinner together, perhaps, maybe try doing some more observing than you talk, especially observing how they relate, right? So for example, if you can get into the house of a newlywed couple, a
couple that's maybe 5 or 7 years into marriage, right? About that. Or, and then a couple who's 20 years into marriage. So like three different kind of ranges of newlywed, you know, a couple that has a little bit of experience, and then a couple that has a lot of experience. That's gravy right there. Because then you can observe, you know, the whole spectrum of what you can expect in a marriage. You can see, okay, these are the things that newlyweds are talking about and what they're struggling with. And then these are the things that a couple 5 or 7 years into a marriage are talking about and struggling with. And then these are the things that a couple 20 years into marriage are doing. And that'll inform you, right? And that'll help you know what to look out for in the person that you're dating too, right? Observe also, as you go over to the houses, what's on their bookshelf and ask them about it, right? Perhaps there was some book or a resource that was really helpful for them and transformational in their marriage, right? That's a good time for you to do some R&D work, right? Another thing, you know, related to this point of dating in community is to date in the open in your church community. They are the people who know you the most and who love you the most, right? Oftentimes, a lot of Christian singles try to hide their dating relationship from their local church community. That is folly. Don't do that, right? Now, apart from the first bit, right, when you're just trying to figure it out, whether to pull the trigger on officially dating or not. You don't need to announce it in front of the church when you're still trying to figure it out, right? You can wait a little bit, right? But you need to out yourselves. You need to out yourselves to your local godly community and invite them to come alongside you, okay? Especially those godly Christian friends and mentors who are closest to you. And involve your parents, right? Especially if you have godly Christian parents, right? Because if this works out, it'll be in your best interest to get on the good terms with the in-laws early and not make them outlaws, right? Don't make your in-laws outlaws. Now, men, getting to know her mom and her dad is going to tell you a lot about the woman that they raised. And woman, getting to know his dad and mom will tell you a lot about the caliber of man that you should expect. Now, this is not always true, right? We're not enslaved to repeat the sins or victories of our parents. But more often than not, it's their examples that we're going to end up imitating in marriage. So at the very least, that sort of information is going to help put things on your radars that you should be aware of as you move towards marriage, okay? So date in community. Sixth step is work at clarity. Work at clarity, okay? You see, there's this danger always of mismatched expectations, right? Where one person has this expectation, this other person has another expectation. And often that's where a lot of trouble happens, right? So it's better to talk openly and clearly about where you're at in the relationship and what are your expectations, and have regular updates, regular check-ins, because this is going to be an ongoing conversation. As the relationship develops, expectations will develop as well. Okay. So keep each other up to date on that, right? So that you try to avoid as much as possible mismatched expectations of where you're at in the relationship, right? Communication is going to be very important. It's important that you speak plainly and directly, okay? Ladies, I'm talking to you. I know sometimes a lot of ladies struggle with this. They want to hint, right? They want to give little nudges and whatnot indirectly, right? Guys don't pick up on that, okay? Let me just tell you plainly, right? We don't pick up on that. Speak plainly and directly. Guys, also, plain, direct, straightforward conversation. Don't beat around the bush, right? Leave beating around the bush for landscapers, okay? You are a straight shooter. That will serve the young lady very well, right? So obviously graciously and compassionately, gently, all those things, right? But speak plainly and directly. Communication is going to be something that you're working on in dating and continue to work on in marriage. So better you start well, okay? Make sure to state your intentions up front. I'm going to read you a quote from Marshall Siegel's book, Not Yet Married. I thought it was good. He says this, that the whole dating game thrives on adrenaline and ambiguity. Always showing enough to pique someone's interest and curiosity, but never enough to answer the most important questions, right? We bait each other with half-truths about the best parts of ourselves, always selecting exactly what to show and how to show it, only revealing what might entice or intrigue each other. Dating today also tends to center the whole world around me, my interests, my friends, my preferences. Many of us think that we're pursuing marriage as we chat and flirt with one another, but we're really just pursuing ourselves, our own image, and our self-esteem or our own selfish desires and our own ego. I think that's very true, right? It's a very true observation of just what the whole dating scene tends to be. Don't be that, okay? Be clear. State your intentions. Work at clarity, okay? Address the hard topics up front, such as gender roles, right? Submission and headship. Listen, that will be a big part of your marriage should you get married. So talk about how do you each understand gender roles, right? Biblically. And perhaps that's something you need to study, right? What does it look like? And what does it mean for the wife to submit? And what does it mean for the man to have headship? Talk about kids, right? The Bible's command to be fruitful and multiply. What do you think about kids? How many kids? How do you think about, you know, seeing kids as a blessing and not a curse and not a hindrance, right? Talk about discipline. How are you going to discipline your kids? You know, the Bible says the spear, not the rod. The he who spears the rod hates his child, right? How do you approach godly discipline? How were you disciplined as a child, right? And how does that impact how you think about that? Talk about finances and budget. How do you approach those things, right? Because one of the biggest challenges for marriages is often finances. So talk about, okay, how do we think about finances? How do we budget? How meticulously do you budget? What percentages do you think is right for saving, for giving towards mission and tithing and all these things, right? All of this is important to know up front. And then talk about mission and kingdom work, because like I said, when you come together, your mission should increase, not decrease, because now it's two instead of one, right? So talk about mission and how do you think about that and working in God's kingdom. Jesus says to seek first the kingdom, and then all these things is going to be added to you. And that actually leads into our last and final, our seventh tip for Christian dating is seek the kingdom together. Seek the kingdom together, right? Find opportunities to serve together. And this can be a way to see the other person's character on display. So for example, in outreach or in evangelism, right? Like go, if your church has different outreach programs or opportunities to evangelize and so on, go together. And just observe each other. See how you serve in the kingdom together, right? Or perhaps it's with another organization, such as a pregnancy care center, whatever it is, right? Go find opportunities to serve together, right? Share, and as you're doing that, share what God is teaching you. You know, as you're perhaps reading in your Bibles every day and you're doing your devotions, right? Like you can share what God is teaching you. And that's a good way to keep updated on each other's spiritual growth, right? Read books together on the Christian faith. Right? Like read theology books and biblical studies books and maybe apologetics books so that you can be better equipped to be on mission together, right? And do this in public spaces, by the way, right? Like back to our other point about accountability, right? And also, not all of your reading should be about relationships. Actually, it's probably healthier if it isn't, right? I've seen couples just get obsessed when they start dating that all they read is dating books or all they read is marriage books. That's good to a point that you need to have some of that, right? But it's good also for you to read some other things. Like when Kylie and I were dating, we were reading a book by Vody Bakum on Joseph. And that was so good because like we were both gleaning from that, learning about scripture, learning from a very solid biblical teacher from the book of you know, from Genesis on the story of Joseph and how it applies to our life today. And, you know, at the end of it, even if we didn't end up married, we would have gained something from that, right? It's a way to grow together. Now, careful not to go ahead of where you are. And what I mean by that is, especially for you men, right? Don't take spiritual leadership where that's not yet your role. Again, back to thinking covenantally, right? You're not yet her husband, right? So even as you read books together, men, you're not teaching and discipling her. That's not your role yet, okay? You two come as two Christians, brother and sister in the Lord, discovering together and discussing, right? And if there are major issues of theological disagreement, like for example, maybe you disagree on divorce and remarriage or on gender roles, right? Then that is better handled by referring them to their spiritual mentors, such as pastors or small group leaders. Because again, you want to act in accordance with where you are covenantally, right? And sometimes even something as simple as praying together might need some caution because that can become a very, you know, intimate time of spiritual bonding if it's done in a way that takes up a husbandly role, like before it's time, right? So just be on guard. And if you're praying together, you know, pray as if you're a brother and sister, right? You should pray together. But you can pray for guidance in your relationship, but don't only pray about your relationship, right? You can pray for your church, pray for your city, pray for the gospel, pray for the kingdom, those are ways that you can be on mission together and pray. And this will tell you a lot about where your partner is in their spiritual walk. And as you seek the kingdom together, you know, perhaps you might end up marrying and perhaps you might not. But either way, that time can be productive and not a regret to you, right? Because if you're both serving and seeking the kingdom together, that's never a loss, right? Too many couples, when they get together, they get so fixated on their relationship that they stop serving in church. They stop doing anything and they stop being on mission, right? Yet the Great Commission, it has no pause clause. There's no pause button on that, right? And this is actually one of the greatest spiritual dangers to your spiritual health. So don't do that, right? When you're dating, still be on mission together. Marriage should increase and refine your mission, not decrease it. So dating, therefore, shouldn't damper your commitment to Christ and his kingdom. You know, the irony is that in seeking first his kingdom, God has promised to add all these things to you. And yet that's exactly what many couples dating today will neglect. So don't neglect that one. So again, my 7 tips for Christian dating is firstly, date for marriage, right? So you understand what the purpose of dating is. 2, guard your hearts, right? Don't be stupid. Seek accountability, 3. Pursue intentionality, right? Be intentional about how you use that time together and for what goal you're going for, right? Date in community, right? Don't try to do this lone wolf style. And then work at clarity, 6. Work at clarity. Communication is going to be key. And then lastly, seek the kingdom together. That's probably the most important one out of all of them, okay? So hopefully that's been helpful for some of you, some thoughts on Christian dating. Like I said, I'm not a Christian dating guru by any means. These are just some things that and some thoughts that I've come up with and learned through experience, and hopefully you'll find it helpful. If you do find it helpful, maybe share it with some of your friends and leave a comment, send an email. You can email me at theotivity@gmail.com with some comments. Perhaps you have some other questions, and maybe that can be another episode in this. But I hope that you've gleaned something helpful. Until next time, soli deo gloria.
Thanks for listening to the Theotivity podcast. If you found this content helpful or edifying, please leave a review on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, follow us on social media and consider sharing this episode to help Theotivity reach others as well. Check out theotivity.com for resources, info on how to support, and subscribe to our monthly newsletter to stay up to date on all the latest content. Until next time, live and create to the glory of God.